Good morning, diners and travelers. You're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig. To start off today, I'm so happy, as usual, to be talking to Christina Richens, who we have this relationship with the Republic of Tea that's gone on for years, haven't we?
Well, they've been in business 25 years. We haven't been dealing with them for quite that long, but I think it's close.
It is close, yeah.
And they have a fascinating idea, a shtick for the company, I guess.
Oh yeah.
Plus, they make an absolutely wonderful product, which Anne adores.
Right. So, and I love their commemorative one. We're going to be talking to Christina about that.
So I ate all the chocolates.
You did.
So there. So here's Christina Richens. Celebrating with us the 25th anniversary of the Republic of Tea.
I always love talking to Christina Richens at the Republic of Tea, and in fact, I always like talking to the Republic of Tea, period. Welcome again to On the Menu, Christina.
Lovely to be here, Ann.
And congratulations on your company's 25th anniversary.
There's a real special reason. I bet not many of the world's tea companies last 25 years.
That's true. We're elated to be turning 25, and we plan to celebrate it all year and make sure all of our citizens, people like you, are part of the celebration.
Now, just for people who haven't listened to me over the years talking to you and your colleagues, the Republic of Tea is a concept, isn't it?
It is. It's a whimsical place that you can go to tea, and Peter and I spoke earlier, for maybe find your zen. And certainly we invite everybody to come to the Republic and enrich your life, enhance your life with tea.
And you have, you carry this theme throughout the titles of your employees. I told you my favorite one is the receptionist, who's the minister of first impressions.
That is a favorite. Yes, we have these great whimsical titles. We're all ministers at the Republic. Those of you who sip the Republic of Tea are citizens. Are the places where you would buy the Republic of Tea, we consider our embassies.
Oh, great.
So, it keeps it very fun and reminds us that tea is something that should be that. It should be fun and whimsical and inspiring all at the same time.
I guess I wanted to ask you right about special tea, the commemorative tea that you designed, because I wasn't sure I was going to like it because I don't have a sweet tooth, and it sounded like it was going to be sweet, but it isn't. It's really totally balanced, and I've been drinking it like crazy.
That's so great. So, Anne, you're referring to our ginger peach chocolate truffle black tea that we are offering to celebrate the 25th anniversary, and it's got quite a recipe. So it's that iconic ginger peach black tea that so many people love that we launched 25 years ago, and then we've blended it with sweet cocoa and some rooibos and some roasted mate. So it has these great sweet hints, but it's not overly sweet.
Yeah.
I think you'll still find it decadent.
Now, yerba mate, that I know, because that's from
South America.
Latin America. And specifically South America. But what's this rooibos? What that
is? I was asking that.
Doesn't sound like anything I'd want. It doesn't sound like anything I'd want to have in my tea.
It's a red tea.
Rooibos is from South Africa. It's an herb that has hearty flavor but doesn't have any caffeine. And it's easy to enjoy. But it is red when it steeps.
Now, you add so many teas. What is your total number of teas now?
We're over 300.
Wow.
And growing. We're continuing to launch new teas. We just had a successful trade show, and we launched several new ones, and we're going to launch a few more in March and then a few more in June.
Uh-huh.
So we're continuing to innovate and just surprise and delight all those fans of the Republic of Tea out there.
I mean, how many people work in the R&D department?
Well, I think it's safe to say that most of us are involved in R&D in some way. We're always listening to what's out there, and we're encouraged to send our ideas in to what is called our sip tank. So that's the R&D department, and There are about five people, the sip tank, yeah. There are about five people that sit on the sip tank and field all kinds of ideas from everyone in the company.
Now, do they get a special bonus for dental treatment? for getting their teeth whitened?
I guess it depends on which teas you sip.
Yeah, that's true. But, you know, you do all kinds of things in terms of innovative presentation. I mean, this particular commemorative tea comes in a gift package, doesn't it? I want to tell you, by the way, that Peter's already eaten all the chocolates out of it.
No, I haven't. There are two left.
Two left.
I ate three. I'm like the man, isn't it Kevin, who has his ad all about burger, how many burgers there are, how many burgers are left, and he finishes up eating all of them. Well, that's probably going to happen.
Yeah,
so you might have to send me some more, Christina.
Well, I'll see if I can find some. Those are limited availability. Those special chocolate butterflies.
I'm sure they are. That's why they disappeared.
And we used the ginger peach tea in the middle. Uh-huh. So you'll get the hints of the tea in there, yeah.
Yeah, I noticed that. I like that one. I was very disappointed. It was only one of those.
Oh.
Well, you know, Peter loves stuff. You also have these other, I don't know how long I've been using these round teas, the canisters with the round tea bags, before somebody told me that they were round so they would go into your cup.
They fit perfectly in the bottom of your cup. That was some of the thinking behind the round tea bag. It's a signature of the Republic of Tea.
Yeah, I don't know why I never thought of it.
You're just altogether very clever, and we have a relatives in England who are probably some of the few people in the world who actually possess the round tins of Downington Abbey teas.
Oh, right.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, very, very special to show off with, especially over there.
I'm sure. Well, I'm glad they've been discovered.
Yeah.
No, we took them and gave them.
Well, look at that. You're bringing people in the UK into the citizens
right,
of the Republic.
Tell me, just turn back the clock. I mean, it's so hard to imagine now, because tea has just escalated its sales since your company was started.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, first of all, who was the founder?
The company was founded by Mel and Patricia Ziegler, who were the original founders of the Banana Republic.
Okay.
And just about 18 months into it, another entrepreneur read about the Republic of Tea, and he purchased the company, and that's Ron Rubin. And today, Ron Rubin's son is our Minister of Evolution and owner.
I love that.
And Todd is running the company. So we had succession a couple of years ago from Ron to Todd, and it really speaks to the Republic. You know, we're family-owned, and we continue to feel that way. We certainly want all of those of you to sip the Republic of Tea to feel like they're part of the family.
Well, I do. I don't know. I guess I've been dealing with it for so long. But now, at the time, I mean, now in hindsight, it's easy to see what a success tea has become, a marketing success. But at the time, 25 years ago, what was the picture?
Well, for Mel and Patricia, they were extensive travelers. So they saw how amazing tea could be outside of the U.S. And their inspiration was to create what they called a tea revolution in the U.S. So that tea moved away from being something that people would just have when they weren't feeling well.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, maybe elevate the whole experience to create premium teas. And really, that idea is what motivated them to continue to build the Republic of Tea, and then we've just taken it from there.
You know, it's a very complex. I just read an article in one of the food magazines about pu'er, and was shocked to find out. I mean, like the secrecy involved with it. They followed this one guy who's a buyer and seller of pu'er, and he won't reveal where he gets it from.
No.
And it mentioned in this article that half the times what you get is not pu'er anyhow.
Well, hopefully you're buying from a reputed source that could share a little bit more detail with you about the pu'er that they're offering. But yes, it's to be a pu'er, to enjoy it, takes an acquired taste. It's quite fantastic when you learn more about it, but interesting culture, part of the tea culture, to learn about pu'er teas.
Well, I mean, go ahead.
We have a pu'er tea that we've added some coconut flakes to,
and
it brings it around. It's really fantastic. It's beautiful as well. It's because pu'er can have such a deep, dark color, and then when you add in those white coconut flakes, it just is quite stunning to look at as well as taste.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty acidic for my taste, don't you?
It can be. It's very hearty for sure, and because pu'er goes through an aging process. So with that comes a lot of complexity, but can also be, it's not for everybody.
No.
I'll say that.
and the pricing of it is astronomical.
Yes, true, but true. High demand in China. It's very, I think the most expensive pu'ers, while they're also created in China, grown in China, and aged in China, they sell for the highest prices there too. So the rest of the world is still learning about type of tea.
Well, but there's a lot of mystery involved with tea in general, isn't there?
Mm-hmm. There is. There's a lot of, I often describe it as kind of folklore. There are a lot of stories and myths and fantasies and things like that that go into tea.
Uh-huh.
Because it's so old. You know, tea is noted to have been discovered 2737 BC.
Oh, geez.
So there are just centuries of tea throughout all kinds of time periods in Asia, where all these stories were created, and fascinating. If you would like to get into those sorts of stories, and I mean, it really affected how a lot of our world history, how commerce came to be, and still is. It affects our trade. It affects. It's part of so deeply entrenched into so many cultures. Tea is quite profound, and we're doing the same thing here in the U.S. We're finding more and more people are looking to tea and herbs for their well-being, and hopefully they're finding the Republic of Tea along the way.
Yeah, but there is a difference between, I mean, real tea comes from that one plant, right?
Yes, that's right, the Camellia sinensis.
Yes, and then all these other things are not really teas.
There are a lot of herbs out there, but that we've gotten quite comfortable calling anything, any plant that's steeped in water, a tea. But truly tea, Camellia sinensis, that plant, is what would produce black tea, green tea, white tea, pu'er, and oolong.
Yeah, now, I
all
understand.
So it actually all comes from the same plant. It's just aged differently or treated differently from the once it's been picked?
It's been picked, what happens next will determine what type of tea it would be, how much oxidation it takes on. So white tea, green tea, no oxidation is occurring, but with black tea, it's left to oxidize, interact with the oxygen in the air, and that's what causes it to turn to a darker color.
Now, what happens with the monkeys? The monkeys pick some of the teas. Do they like tea?
Well, I'm glad that I prefaced the folklore.
We had an orthopedic surgeon who's from Hong Kong.
A very wealthy orthopedic surgeon.
Very wealthy and very world known, you know. And he used to give me this particular tea that I can't remember what kind it was, but I couldn't read the label anyhow. It was all in Chinese. But he told me how much it cost, which was outrageous. Mm. But he also told me that it came from this high mountainous area and it was picked by monkeys, and I didn't believe it.
Well, there are stories like that. It probably came from the Wuyi Mountains of China. That's where monkey picked, the term is often used. And what that means, what monkey picked means, there are not monkeys. But monkeys live there, but they're not picking tea. Someone who's purveying the tea, making their tea to sell, their most prized tea, they would call it monkey picked. So it's the best of their offering would be the monkey picked. So yeah. That's what the term actually means. So
it's really not,
yes,
it's really not
serving
really.
You.
I like thinking of all these little monkeys climbing in the trees and hand picking my tea leaves.
Well, it gets it off the top, I guess. No, I mean, I guess the deal is that in fact it's difficult to pick because it must be right on the top, so there must be the best leaves are the ones that are near the top of the tree.
This is true, and usually grown on these steep mountainsides that might have a lot of rocks. So uh-huh. difficult to get to, uh-huh. But that also, contributes to how rare it is and how careful one would need to be with all the work that it took to acquire it, to certainly take extra special care in all of the steps. And that, there again would lead to that, super premium tea, the monkey picked.
Now, hold on a second. I have another abstruse question. There's a particular kind of coffee.
Yeah, I know where you're going.
You know where I'm going. Okay.
No.
Listeners don't know where I'm going, so we'll let them judge whether or not this is appropriate. But there supposedly is a kind of coffee that it passes through the body of a wild cat.
Yeah. Kapiluwak. Yes.
It's highly prized, and I was going to ask if there was anything similar in the world of tea. Is there anything in the world of tea that's, shall we say, regurgitated in the same way?
Not that I have experienced, Peter, but that doesn't mean that it hasn't happened or has been attempted, because, yes, that Kapiluwak coffee goes for a very, very high price. So,
have you ever had it, Christina?
Many years ago, yes.
Did you really? Where did you have it?
I did. Well, I was in the coffee industry, almost 2 decades ago, I was offered it once. Yes, it was one of those experiences that you're not sure what you want to do or not, but you do it, and I can't say that it. I would pay that kind of money, but people do. People will do all kinds of things for something that they're passionate about, I guess. And in the coffee world, that was one of them.
There you go.
Well, now, for a while there, I was drinking my green tea.
There's always room for a spin-off.
Yeah, with a couple threads of saffron in it, because I read about how healthy this is. Except Peter pointed out that it was costing a lot of money.
I always wondered why we never seemed to be any saffron.
Well, that's quite indulgent, but we all deserve that at times. So yeah.
I would bite and then it would disappear.
Now, Christina, I heard the latest tea trend is for oolong. Now, what is it?
I was just having some oolong a little while ago. So oolong is as we mentioned, comes from that same plant, but it's oxidized. Best, easiest way to put it is in between green and black. So the edges of the leaf would have some oxidation starting to turn towards a black tea, but the vein in the middle of the leaf would stay green. So when you would steep an oolong tea at your home, if you take the tea leaf and unfurl it and look at it, you'll see that the tea is not fully oxidized or hasn't fully turned black like a black tea. Oolong leaves are usually quite large. You'd get most of the great oolongs would come from Taiwan or parts of China where the tea leaves are very large. And oolong teas are beautiful. One of the unique attributes of oolong tea is that you can steep it multiple times. So you can fill your tea basket and continue to pour hot water over it, and it'll change slightly every time you steep it. Sometimes it'll be a little bit sweeter than the last time, or more floral. All these different complexities of the flavor will come out as you steep it multiple times. So it's a very special oolong tea.
And you
probably all
make
are to
that
me,
too.
But,
do you have that too?
We do. We have several oolong teas. One of the favorites we have is called milk oolong, because naturally occurring in those flavor notes is some creamy texture. It has this great smooth body, and then it kind of is reminiscent of something like that would have milk, but it doesn't.
Wow.
Christina, you are such an incredible enthusiast and such a wonderful spokesperson for your company.
And well.
Well, what a nice compliment. Thank you. It's easy to work for somebody, for a company like the Republic of Tea, and wax poetic about it all the time.
And we'll talk to you when the next 25 rolls around.
Okay.
Hopefully we will. And
in the meantime, I only have one suggestion. I have a feeling that I'm going to suggest a name change to the Democracy of Tea rather than the Republic of Tea.
Oh.
And you can take that any way you like.
Thanks, Peter. Oh. I think I know where you're coming from.
Yeah, Christina, always love talking to you.
Oh, my pleasure, Anne. I was so delighted to hear that you were willing to speak with me again.
Oh,
we'll
I
do
love
it again
it.
Soon. That's
I love
great.
It. I may just start calling you to talk.
Oh, I like that. That sounds like a good idea.
All right, Christina, thanks again, and happy anniversary.
Well, thank you so much.
I suspect Dan's going to take a minute to go downstairs and make a cup of this delicious tea.
It's good tea.
But she's not really, because she's chained to the microphone, and we'll be back with another exciting guest, a duo this time, right after the break, so don't go away.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Next stop, at first...
You're supposed to say welcome back.
Oh, welcome back.
Yeah, we forgot welcome back.
Yeah, well... At any rate,
but who's up next?
Yeah, Delicious and Sons. And because of the name, I initially thought that it was a mother and son team, but it turns out it's a couple, a husband and wife, and they have a delicious product line that they're going to talk to us about, and they have a delicious lifestyle since they live in Barcelona, which is a city I'd love to live in myself.
So there you go. So it's Delicious and Sons. And
Ricky Mandel and Monica Navarro, Delicious and Sons.
And their wonderful sauces and pastes and all kinds of good stuff. We died over the artichoke spread. We ate it in two sittings right out of the jar. And you'll do the same thing.
You know, from the name of this company, Delicious and Sons, I thought it was a mother-son corporation, but it turns out that it's actually a husband and wife company, and the products we've sampled
they're
delicious.
Actually, they're not actually selling babies.
No, and they're not selling babies.
maybe you are.
But we're talking to Ricky Mandel and Monica Navarro. And the company is, as I said, Delicious and Sons. And let's talk a little bit about your individual backgrounds and how you got to this point of starting up this company.
Wow, this is really a long time ago because this is a new company, but it's a new brand, a new company, but this is not our first adventure in the food business, because we create another company named Deli Shop, in fact, with retail business, cooking school here in Barcelona and in Madrid. And we have been in distribution in Europe more than nine countries. And with this brand, which is Deli Shop, and it's still running. But from the last 5 years, we decided that we have to do something more for the food business, and we must try to normalize what is the meaning of quality. And it's a question of flavor, it's a question of being gourmet, but try to be close to the most people that we can do it. Try to make like a range of products that are super healthy, but with the flavor and the easy way to cooking at the top of everything, but do it affordable. You know, something that is not scary, that is not something just for Christmas or for a present or for a special night. It's something that we have really in our heads, that we need to be more try to be affordable and try to be closer to the people and try to bring the people this Mediterranean flavor. The flavor, but at the same time with a product that is really healthy because we have two kids. And one of the reasons we started to develop all the innovation behind this range of products, it was because our Olivia has 9 years and a half and she has intolerance of everything, gluten, lactose, I mean everything, sugar, of course, fructose. And Ricky, who is the chef behind the brand, he was developing during 5 years before we launched all of the recipes to try to be not just a gourmet food brand or an organic food brand or a gluten-free food brand. No, we are gluten-free, we are completely natural, non-GMO, vegan and vegetarian, which it means that for us, the brand of the 21st century, the brand that we have been dreaming. I'm 46 years old now, and I have been dreaming from, I don't know, maybe 15 years to try to launch something that it's for almost everybody, or at least it's for a lot of people with different cultures around a table, which is something that is happening nowadays here in Barcelona, in Italy, in New York, in L.A., in San Francisco. It doesn't matter where you're traveling, Korea or Japan, whatever. It doesn't matter. You are in a table with friends and family, and there is people with different diets, with different religions, with different everything is completely different, and we try to be for everybody, or at least for the most number of people that we can be. It's not a question of we are not vegan or just vegetarian. We are much more about this, you know. And it's a question of an ethic. You know, it's the ethic that is surrounding the brand.
Now, Ricky, you are a chef, right? And you are from New York, right?
Yes, I'm from New York, but I've lived in Barcelona for the last 15 years.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, that's probably one city I could live in easily. Mm-hmm. I love Barcelona, so Peter's does too. And now, but Monica, what was your exposure to the food business before you partnered with your husband?
In fact, I'm a sociologist.
Sociology?
Something, yeah. And I was working basically for luxury brands in Europe. And the last 9 years, I was head of a company, an advertising company named Mechanic, and I was in charge of Unilever and all of the food brands. And they gave me the opportunity to learn a lot because my background was for always luxury brands, from cars to fashion to perfumes, basically. And with Unilever, I learned a lot. It was mass market. It was another completely different environment, but I learned a lot. And it was an amazing mix of having worked 17 years in communication, especially in luxury brands. And my passion was this. I mean, we are a family. I have 23 cousins, and these 23, only one is a man. The rest, we are all women. And I have been cooking with my family and my cousins. And my mom is a great cooker. It's just Mediterranean food, but she's not a professional of food. But here in Barcelona, the tradition is to cook for every season, for every moment, to cook with your family, with your friends. And this is something that really passionate me. And it's something we have to keep. And we cook from the very beginning with them. We cook a lot with them, and they eat everything. We have been traveling all over the world with our kids, and they eat everything. This is not true. That's what the people...
What is that noise?
I don't know.
Huh. Okay, it must be there's some birds jumping up and down on the telephone wire.
Oh, my God.
No, we're joking. What was the first product that you produced?
The first product?
It's a good question. I would say it was the pestos. The two pestos. The basil pesto and the pesto rosso.
Okay.
For us, it's such a basic product that for us it was, for me, the challenge was to make a product that would fit in with everything that Monica said. Quality, all the certifications that we needed and everything. But to make a quality product that really lived up to the name and the standards that and the criteria that we use to define and to bring a product into our range. There are so many pestos on the market that our feeling was that you really want that natural basil that you just picked from your garden feel.
Uh-huh. Not easy
feel
to do.
It. And we kept working on that, and we thought if we could develop that and bring that to market, then that would be a real winner and a great, you know, kind of centerpiece of the range. And we worked on that. We were able to develop these two pestos, which are, I think the basil pesto is definitely one of the best on the market. But when you open it, it doesn't have any chemical flavor, any of those notes that you think that it's been sitting in a jar. When basil pesto is freshness. I mean, it's spring, it's summer. It's just, you know, it's bursting with aroma, color of it as well. And you really want, that's what you want when you open a jar of pesto. You know, it's like you just made it at home and you have it in your fridge, or you make it fresh whenever you need it from herbs from your garden. And to achieve that in a jarred version, also that's organic and non-GMO of everything, that was the challenge. But to be able to do that was very gratifying. And we started from there.
Now, how many products do you have now? Seems like quite a lot.
We have 17.
We have 17 SKUs.
Yeah,
it's,
you know,
quite
the,
amazing.
Your artichoke spread saved our lives once.
I can end one jar. It's amazing. It's one of my favorite ones. The artichoke is like.
Monica loves the artichoke. I mean, if we open a jar at a meal, it does not get put
back. I know.
Back
well, I was doing
no,
the
it's
same
impossible.
Thing.
What's really great is that is the artichoke spread also is if it's an amazing component to salad dressings. I don't know if you're into salad dressings. I mean, here it's very. I'm a huge salad guy, and he's a salad dressing guy from, obviously, in the U.S. that it's all about, you know, dressings and condiments. And here in Spain, it's just oil and vinegar. You know, you can't find a salad dressing anywhere. But using the artichoke paste, the artichoke spread as a component to a salad dressing is really good.
I have a couple of questions for you related to regulation. We read a lot here about the amount of regulation there is regarding food products in the European Union in general. So making food products must be quite an adventure. But then we've heard even more so people trying to get their products into the US market have to deal with the US Department of Agriculture and they make the EU people look like pikers. They're so typical.
Yeah, it's a challenge. It's a challenge on both fronts because they don't speak the same language. And they don't agree on the same labeling, and they don't agree on the same theory of what certifications mean.
Right, but let's talk about around Europe and then around the United States, where a significant percentage of our listeners are, and then around the world. How accessible are these products going to be? I mean, how easy is it going to be for people to find them? And where can they find them? Is there some guide to helping them figure out where they might be in stock?
Mm-hmm. Right now, our products, we presented the brand at the Fancy Food Show in June, and we started selling in September in the New York area, in the greater New York area, or tri-state area on the East Coast. We are continuing to build in that region, and our goal is by the end of, within the next 12 to 18 months to have national distribution across the U.S., meaning that, as Monica said, to bring the products to as many people as possible. That is our goal, and, you know, to have it in, you know, widely available in supermarkets and not just, you know, it's not specialty stores, but it is in supermarkets across the country. Currently, it is available nationally on Amazon as well and on our own website, which is deliciousandsons.com, where we have our own e-commerce site as well, and we ship nationally across the U.S.
Oh, great.
That would be for the U.S. and in terms of jumping across here in Spain, we start national as well within the next 6 months. Again, in supermarkets across Spain, and from there, our goal is to continue in other countries, mainly in would be Western and Northern Europe, start and then growing out from there.
Now, why don't we just give the listeners the correct site URL for your website?
Sure. It's www.deliciousandsons, and is A-N-D, sons in plural, .com.
Great. That's very good.
What is that? Does that mean? Does that? What does that mean? Does it mean your sons are delicious?
I think our children are delicious, but obviously,
oh, they're very handsome. You've got a great family.
But yeah. the company is Delicious and Sons, and it's a family of flavor. Meaning that we think that our products, of the 17 products that we have and we can grow in the future, that itself is a family of products. And as Monica said, the flavor is, for us, is one of the most important criteria of the company, of the products that we do. And what we wanted to show with the name, with Delicious and Sons, is that it's a family of products, that it's a brand that incorporates this whole family of products. It's not just, you know, and as Monica said, whether it's organic or gluten-free or non-GMO, but it's also not just a condiment brand or an Italian brand or a Spanish brand or something that just makes olive oils. It's a whole family. It's a range of products, a whole family of products, a whole family of flavors. And beyond that, also to share the family values. It's a family company. It's a husband and wife team. We've been doing this for over 12 years in the food business together. But really, it's more about, you know, the values. And you asked beginning about our mission, it's to bring that type of ethics to the products that we do and share that with our consumers, with our clients.
Well, you know, you have a great tradition. Spain has a great tradition of superlative jarred product. I mean, I don't know any other country that has such really fresh and wonderful flavors in jars. A lot of your products, though, really are sort of, by definition, Italian.
Yes, by definition, Italian. Some are definitely very Italian. Obviously, the two pestos that I mentioned are very Italian. What we look is for the authenticity of the product, but as well as kind of the Mediterranean ethos involved, that even though some of our products are obviously tomato sauces we make in southern Italy.
Yeah, Puglia. That's what I was asking. So you do make them in southern Italy?
We do. The authenticity of the product is one of the things that is most important to us, and also I think allows us to create the authentic but high-quality products that taste like you imagine the product should taste like.
That's a very clever way of saying
it. It's not using imported tomatoes from a place to make a sauce somewhere else. It's in the place where the people use those imported tomatoes. We're picking them locally to make our sauces there.
Oh, that's great. That really is great. Now, I already expressed, and also I guess that Monica really loves this artichoke dip. Your spreads are some of the most wonderful things, I think, that you offer. How about giving us some ideas of other favorites in your product line?
Wow. We are really successful with the saffron and orange aioli, but my preferred one is the other one, is the basil and lemon aioli. In this case, the aiolis are made here in Spain, in Catalonia, because it's a completely different formula, different recipe that Ricky can explain more than I, but it's a different recipe than the one that the French made. Why is different? Because we don't use egg. We use extra virgin olive oil and garlic. And then we put the atron, we add the saffron and the orange in one case, and the lemon and the basil in the other one. And it's completely amazing. It's something like to die for. And you can cook so many different things. You can use them for fish, for meat, just in a sandwich. I mean, for an hamburger, for...
As a dipping sauce for French fries, fried calamari,
oh,
bread.
That's good.
See, yeah, be good with octopus.
It'd be good with octopus.
Mrs. Haig is in love with octopus.
Mm-hmm. I love octopus. And we interviewed it was an Italian name company that supplies chefs in the U.S. with octopus, and they get their octopus from Spain.
Yeah,
from Greece. Uh-huh.
From the Canary Islands, I think is
Canary
what they said.
Islands.
And they get
Canary Islands, or Galicia used to have really
Galicia is one of the most famous regions for their octopus. Yeah, and octopus is becoming a very trendy, popular dish here.
Oh, it is.
Before, it was very resigned to some traditional tapas places, and then, like Monica said, from typical Galician restaurants. But now it's popping up. It's popping up everywhere.
But you know what?
It's served with octopus with paprika and spicy paprika and potatoes.
That's Peter's favorite way of doing it. Yeah, but you know, it's getting really pricey here now. It's trendy and it's getting pricey. I'm not used to that.
Yes.
I mean, I'm used to my ancestors beating them against the rocks, these pulpy,
Right.
And Cecilia. Anyhow, like, where are you going to go with this company? I see you have your work made out for you in just expanding your distribution. Are you going to also, at the same time, expand the product line, or what's the next step with your company?
Well, we have to find the best partner. Now we are in one coast. We need to be in the other coast. We need to be nationally. We need to let this dream about affordability for the maximum number of consumers being real. You know, it's like, we need to be there, but from other side, we need to continue growing the line and see what is working in the States and what is going to be working in UK, for example, and on Finland. Or, you know, it's like we need to think about each market. No, but for us, the most important thing is we are really little. This is a family project, a family business, and. It's difficult. It's difficult. This is the reality. But the most important thing is that we have been investing a lot of research and a lot of time to create this, and the innovation we have behind the brand to be able to say that we are all natural, organic, gluten-free, non-GMO, and all of this, vegan, vegetarian. I mean, this is a lot.
Yeah.
When we go visiting like clients like Kylian and they look at our catalog, we have the last page, it's product attribute. And they open their mouth like, how can this be possible? I mean, first, we have been launching another brand before 15 years ago. Then that makes us a lot of experience about what are we doing. But then from the last 5 years, we have been working really, really hard from Monday to Sunday, because this is a question of being an entrepreneur and this is a question of a family business. From Monday to Sunday to get into this. We are not producing, like, just an organic range of products, no, with a lot of sugar added. No, this is not our case, no? It's completely different. And we are trying to be really, like, having this feeling of this is the brand that the 21st century needs. This is the brand that this normal thing, all of the values about a family, behind family and friends, around a table. What does it mean, no?
Right.
And with the food always being in the middle of everything, because at the end, when you are having a lunch with friends or a dinner, it's something that around a table, a lot of things are happening and a lot of authentic things can happen. And if you have something that at the same time has a really high level on ethics and it's a quality product, but you are enjoying a lot because the flavor and the authenticity is amazing. I mean, this is our dream. Then let's try to bring it into real. No, it's not easy, as I said. But we have been putting all of the little stones to try to get it to be this amazing brand of the 21st
century. Well, I think you've made a great deal of progress, and I think that you have a superb product.
In fact, it's quite delicious.
Thank you.
Thank you. You have to come to Barcelona. We are
going to
cook for you.
Bye-bye, and we'll see you one day in Barcelona.
We'll let you know.
Please do.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Well, they say that everything old is new again, but you know what? We could say, but better, because I had been wondering whatever happened.
Yeah,
what became of
cottage cheese?
Cottage cheese, yeah.
I always hated it. I always hated even having it in the refrigerator.
Right.
And used to love it, but somebody reinvented it to make it even more delicious, even more lovable.
And they called that moon.
And then snuck it onto my breakfast fruit bowl instead of what she used to put on there, which was yogurt. Yes. So we had fruit embedded in the bottom of it, different kinds of ripe fruit. It really was quite delicious and a very elegant product as well.
Yes.
So here's the story of Muna.
Well, I found a new product to love, and we're going to be talking to Muna.
Sounds like a song.
Muna is the name of the company producing this wonderful new variety of cottage cheese, and we're going to be talking to Gail Balderson, the director of marketing, about how long it's been on the market. It's a very new company, is it not, Gail?
Yes, Muna launched in August of 2016. We're sold in the northeast part of the United States. We're in about 3,000 retail locations.
Now, can people also order off the internet?
No, it is not available online.
Okay. And will you be, obviously, I imagine you're going to be expanding because it's a really good product.
Oh, thank you. Yes, we're continuing to expand on a daily basis into retailers, but we don't have any immediate plans to be selling online, going through retail stores.
So you're committed to the traditional retail model.
Yes,
you're in supermarkets and Whole Food markets and places like that.
Yes, we're in 3,000 supermarkets throughout the Northeast. And chains include Acme and Safeway and ShopRite. So I could give you a list of, you know, stores if that's something that you're interested in. But we have, there's a store locator on our website.
Right.
Okay. Well, let's pop that website name in just while we think of it.
Yeah. What's the spelling?
Oh, it's MUUNA.com, Muna.com.
Right. And
we have a store locator on our website.
That's great. Now, you know, you're not even going to believe this, but I don't remember where I encountered your company product, but I have been thinking, I was just at the time thinking, you know, I miss cottage cheese. Whatever happened to cottage cheese? And then this pops up right into my space here.
And then the funny part about it is I said, sweetheart, I think the reason we don't do cottage cheese is I always hated it.
but we're going to change the way you think about cottage cheese.
This kind I really like.
Oh, that's
It's really quite amazing. And here's the most incredible thing, and I think you can take some personal credit for this. The packaging of the samples that you sent was so smart and sophisticated.
Oh, yeah.
I couldn't believe it.
It's just
so professional looking, and we just emptied the package and put everything in the refrigerator, and it's going pretty quick.
Yeah.
Oh. What's unique about Muna is we're really trying to change the way consumers think about cottage cheese. We have a proprietary recipe that's very rich and creamy, like a melt-in-your-mouth texture.
Oh, it's wonderful.
Thank you. And we have reimagined the category with single-serve cups. So each cup is a single serving of 5.3 ounces. And what's even more unique about it is we have delicious pieces of fruit in the cottage cheese. So we have plain, of course, low-fat plain, and then we have five different fruit varieties, strawberry, blueberry, pineapple, peach, and mango.
I like mango best.
That's my favorite as well.
Now be tolerant with me, Gail. What exactly is cottage cheese? I mean, I sort of know what yogurt is, I think. I know what cheese is. What is cottage cheese actually?
So cottage cheese is It dates back to the 1800s, really, and it's a simple cheese, and it's made with a process of taking the cheese curds
yes.
and mixing it with like a formulation of like low-fat milk, and in this case, with fruit to produce the flavored cottage cheeses.
Now, I always thought of it as sort of punishment, dietary punishment. I remember even a period of time where I was eating the skim milk, no fat, cottage cheese, which was like swallowing sandpaper. And
well,
this has no relationship to it. This is a treasure. I mean, it's a pleasure, I gotta say. And, we've even put it on top of pork stew.
That sounds
fruit.
Delicious.
It is good.
Yeah. Well, cottage cheese, I think it was back in the 80s known very much as a diet food, and it does get its roots from being very high in protein. So a 5.3-ounce cup of the Muna flavored cottage cheese has 15 grams of protein in it, and the 5.3-ounce of the plain has 19 grams of protein in it. So I think that's why it has such a reputation as a good diet food, because it's very high in protein, and protein keeps you full longer. And for the flavor varieties, there's only 130 calories per cup. It's really also not a high caloric product, and the sugar content on the fruit varieties, depending on the fruit flavor, is between 9 and 11 grams, so that's relatively low. And on the plain varieties, it's even lower. So it's just has the natural sugar that naturally would occur. So in terms of being a diet food, I think it gets its roots as just being very healthy and good for you. And we've learned a lot throughout the years about eating, and different foods kind of have become popular over time. But cottage cheese remains a very healthy, flavorful product to eat when you're watching your weight, because it's not high in calories. It's relatively low in sugar, and it has that boost of protein that keeps you full longer.
Now, Gerard Meyer is the yes. CEO of the company. Did he reimagine cottage cheese? Did he invent this product?
Gerard Meyer has been very involved in the launch of the Muna brand and the formulations. Muna is part of a larger dairy company called Tanuva, which is the largest dairy company in Israel, and they started the project a few years back looking to launch a U.S.-oriented cottage cheese brand into the United States. And when I say U.S.-oriented, really appealing to the taste of the U.S. consumer, and began formulations and testing and research to see if it was a viable opportunity. And Gerard's been working with them very closely on the project for the past couple of years. So he's been very instrumental in the launch, yes.
Now, is it now made in the USA?
Yes, we're made in the USA. All the manufacturing is done, yeah. Our headquarters is in Princeton, and our manufacturing facility is in Minneapolis.
No. The reason I asked the question might seem like a silly question, but we talked to quite a number of food producers, and those who start out manufacturing outside the United States sometimes find the U.S. Department of Agriculture and other regulations so difficult that they start producing in the USA out of just desperation. In your case, I'm guessing the business plan always said this is a product that we're going to make here in the good old USA.
Yes, it is not something that was made offshore. It's been it's made just in the United States.
So there isn't an equivalent product in Israel? Or?
No, there's a Tanuva brand cottage cheese in Israel, but it's not Muna brand.
Yeah, well, Israel's really coming up to fill some important niches. I mean, we just got some samples of, what's that, the sesame seed thing that goes into hummus. What is it?
Oh, tahini?
Tahini.
Tahini.
Yeah, yeah, we it's fabulous. It's Israeli seeds.
Did you have some tahini with cottage cheese?
No, I've never mixed the two, have you?
No, I was talking to Anne. She likes mixing things together that really typically don't belong together, but she does it anyway.
Well, did I hear you correctly that you're actually advertising for the Super Bowl, on the Super Bowl?
Yes, we're going to have an ad right before the halftime show on the Super Bowl in the Philadelphia market.
Okay, so it's a specific market. It's not a national ad.
No, it's not a national ad.
That's a lot of money. they're being picky, too, about what they're going to run as the Super Bowl people.
Yeah, we actually had two local companies, Gail, both of whom had their ads rejected by the Super Bowl.
Yeah, they rejected
the Super Bowl
them.
Thought police decided they were inappropriate. I really, considering all the things that go on during the Super Bowl, including these silly halftime shows, I just wonder how they can keep a straight face when they say you can't do this. But I think even the Budweiser ad they were threatening to ban that.
Yeah. To do with the immigration reform and the war.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it was all about August Bush, something or other.
He was
arriving in this country and how difficult his life was when he got here. And it seems to me that's a perfectly valid thing to have an ad about. But apparently, it's not kosher. Is probably the wrong word to use right now. Anyway.
Now tell me this: what was Gerard doing before he started working on this product launch?
Gerard was the president of SodaStream. SodaStream Home Soda Makers. And Gerard was very instrumental in launching that business into the United States and growing it to be a national well-renowned brand across major retailers throughout the United States.
He has experience with the food segment then.
Yes, yes. He has also worked at Kraft and other large food manufacturers throughout his career. So he has a very long-standing career in the consumer packaged goods industry and experience launching and growing brands into the U.S. marketplace.
What did you do beforehand?
Sounds like just the guy to do this, huh?
Yeah. What did you do, Gail?
I also was with SodaStream. Gerard and I had met at SodaStream, and I was the director of marketing at SodaStream.
Good. Okay. And are you going to have a lifetime supply of free Luna?
That's a perk of the job, Anne.
Well, Gail, you really stepped into this interview at the last minute because of all the busyness going on with the company. And I really appreciate you doing that and being so lucid with us about what to expect from this product. Again, listeners, when I say cottage cheese, I mean, I'm going to have to say the company slogan is called The New Way to Cottage, because it's not your old grandmother's or grandfather's cottage cheese, believe me. And I'm enjoying it, Gail, and enjoyed talking to you as well.
And,
well, thank you very much.
Just to give you an idea how revolutionary it is, there is cottage cheese in our refrigerator for the first time for 40 years. I couldn't even stand being close to it.
Oh, I'm glad to have you as part of the Muna family.
So it's a great achievement. Your company's a great achievement. I'm sure with the marketing skills that you and
Gerard
possess, we're going to be talking some more about this in the future. We're going to be talking about national. We're going to be talking about international. We're going to be talking about other new things you can do with cottage cheese. And when those things are happening, you must give us a shout and come back on the program and tell our listeners more about it. Thank you so much.
Oh, we absolutely will.
Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks, Gail.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate your time.
And before we let you go, just a reminder for those of you who might be listening on your portable device or for whatever reason, don't see the website introduction of the program and don't necessarily listen all the way through the segments. We include the website and the way you can get these wonderful products right there, so you won't be disappointed and say, how do I get some? Because we make sure that you know why and how. because that's thoughtful of us, isn't it, sweetheart?
Sure.
And you're very quiet.
Sure, sure.
You're thinking about Muna, or you're thinking about Delicious and Sons, or you're thinking about tea?
I don't know. I'm thinking about nothing at all.
All of the above. Thinking of nothing at all. Okay. Well, there you go. She's thinking nothing at all until next week, when we'll see you again, same time, same place. And until then.
Bye-bye.